if you're questioning whether or not you've communicated something, you clearly haven't. If you're hungry, and you have to be hungry to start your own business and go out on your own, figure out a way to find the time to go and talk to customers.
Millions of other homeowners overspend every year on property expenses, such as property taxes, homeowners insurance, utilities, without realizing there could be a secret savings in there for them. Welcome to the Learn It All podcast, the show for today's leaders who want to get and stay ahead of the game, because we realize that great leaders aren't born or made, they are constantly in the making. I'm your host, Damon Lemby. I'm a two-time best-selling author, and I'm the CEO of Learn It, a live learning platform that has upskilled over 2 million people over the past 3 decades. Joining me today is Colton Pace. In our conversation, we learn how OwnWell helps customers save money on their most valuable assets, mainly through property taxes and also utilities and other things. Colton shares with us what he learned in business school and what he didn't learn in business school when it comes to being a successful founder. I think it's a very interesting take that he shares with us. We also talk about how healthy conflict is important and the ritual that him and his co-founders have come up with. When I asked him about what happens when you don't agree on something and how does decision-making work, I think that's a key part of this conversation. And finally, why accelerated innovation is a core value at OwnWell and so much more. How's it going, buddy? Welcome to the show. Yeah, so let's see. So you went from managing billionaires' assets to founding your own company. What inspired you to leave that particular career path you're on and start OwnWell?
I always say, like, simply put, impact. And so managing money, incredible experience. I sat in a great seat. I got to see all these different things, how everything was optimized, every expense, every asset had some sort of manager in some regard, whether it was a CPA or a tax consultant or an attorney. And it's like all these things that I saw the most sophisticated, wealthy individuals in the world doing, normal people can do too. And so how can I take those tools, tips, resources, things I saw and make an impact? And that's, I mean, that started with friends and family. Like what tools and things were we doing here that other people just don't know about or don't have access to, or they're not going to pay a tax consultant or an attorney to do? And so started OwnWell to really democratize access to those levels of expertise. And at scale, I'm actually helping way more assets than I was working for a billionaire.
What an amazing opportunity and experience. And we could probably ask you some more questions about that moving forward. But let's go a little deeper. Share with us, what is OwnWell and how do you help your customers?
OwnWell, simply put, provides resources, information, tools for everybody to manage their real estate with confidence. We're on a mission to make the costs of real estate more clear and equitable. And we do that by really helping you reduce your expenses. And so we illustrate whether or not you're overpaying across your real estate expenses. We group them into 5 categories: mortgage, taxes, insurance, utilities, and maintenance. And we actually have a function within OwnWell's portal to help you look at your monthly costs associated with your real estate and compare it to others in your area. So you know if you're overpaying on insurance relative to others, you know if you're overpaying on your property tax bill relative to others. And then not only are we informing you, we help you reduce them. And so our primary product and what we really started with was helping people reduce their property tax bill. The majority of people in the country don't appeal their property tax bill or have the adequate exemption for they should have. We've gotten really, really good at making sure you're taking advantage of every opportunity to reduce your property tax bill. And so if you sign up at ownwell.com today, you can enter your address, authorize us to go talk to the tax assessor on your behalf, and we save our clients a little less than 6% on average every single year. And so at OwnWell, we do that year over year and just help people manage these expenses and make sure that their costs are as low as they can be.
That's great. You know, I was sharing with you backstage that I come from a real estate background. So as I was preparing for this interview, I just kind of quizzed some of my friends who have been in real estate for a long time. And they all thought that property taxes were just a fixed expense and that it wasn't something that you could do anything with. Why do you think so many people think that these bills are just fixed bills?
Yeah, it's a bill from the government. But like, even like logically, we're not trained to dispute what the government's saying, right? So the way it works is you get a tax assessment every single year. The government goes out and puts a number on your property. And this number is supposed to be fair market value in the majority of geographies. And as you know, like if you go on Zillow and try and find the value of your home, that's not right. right? There's a really big confidence interval of where it actually should be. So same thing, right? It's not always the perfect number, and taxes have to be fair and equal. So if your neighbor's paying less in certain geographies than someone else, we can argue on that behalf as well, on that basis as well. So most people just don't go this deep, and it's a bill from the government. So I'm putting myself in the shoes of, you know, same with my friends and family before I started the business. It's a bill from the government. You're going to pay it. It's a tax. It's like trying to fight your income taxes. It's not something we do. But property taxes is a little different, and it's run at the local level. So there is an opportunity to make sure you're not overpaying.
And you also help with homeowners insurance, right? I mean, especially where I live, it's almost impossible to get it. And it's ridiculous how expensive it works. So that's something you guys can help with as well?
Yeah. Insurance is a insane thing right now. And as you can imagine, we have a large footprint in California, Texas, and Florida, where, I mean, the Houston area, Florida, and California specifically are incredibly difficult to insure. So basically what we do is we have an insurance entity. We are allowed to go and shop across all the different carriers on your behalf. So if you gave me your current policy, or you were looking for a policy and you said, like, this is the price, I go in the background and shop for quotes. I don't expose your email. I don't expose your phone number. And I'm constantly monitoring to see if you're overpaying. And if I find a lower quote, I'll bring it back to you and say, like, look, this is an option you can take advantage of. And so without going through the whole process or going into an insurance marketplace where you get blasted by emails and phone calls, we can go make sure you're not overpaying on any insurance expense, explore 40 different carriers, and then bring back to you to make any decisions.
That's amazing. And like I said, I'll probably talk to you about this offline, looking for some, because I don't think people spend enough time looking into how they could actually save money on certain expenses. And if we have somebody like Ownwell who could help with that, you know, they'd kind of take that off your plate. And what I understand as well is you kind of do it on a contingency basis, right?
Exactly. So we operate entirely on a contingency fee. If we don't save you money, we are entirely free. If we do save you money, it's 25 to 35%, depending on the geography and service, of what we've saved you in that first year only. So if I get you a new insurance plan and you save $1,000, I'm going to charge you $250, but you're going to keep those savings for every year to come. And so it's like we're in the background shopping, making sure, negotiating on all your bills to make sure you're not overpaying, so you can be working your day job, doing what you need to do. And we'll make sure, you know, we're keeping things and expenses as low as possible.
So let's kind of switch gears and go towards your personal journey. So what did you learn? So you went to business school at UCLA, I believe. And what did you learn there that helped shape your experience to becoming a founder and starting Ownwell?
A couple things. First, I'll say I was probably part of the worst class of business school history ever. I had 2 quarters in person, and then the rest was virtual COVID, which if anybody goes to business school, I guess try to avoid doing it virtually, because that is not nearly as fun or not nearly as helpful. But during that virtual time, myself and my 2 co-founders, I was in Montana, one of them was in Florida, one of them was in LA, just hunkered down doing school virtually, and we were working on the business. So it almost created that opportunity for us to create Ownwell while I was at business school. Two things I guess I would say that really stand out to me when you ask that question. One, I found my co-founders there. Starting a business by yourself, I would not recommend. I would not be where I am today if it was not for Frank and Joseph. Yeah, in the trenches together. Joseph is a computer science PhD, and Frank was in my UCLA business school class. So one incredible opportunity to network. I also met the investors who actually wrote the first check into the business through business school. So as they say, networking opportunity at business school is there, and it gives you the opportunity to kind of go and do something different. And then the second thing, organizational behavior, right? Like these are classes in business school or even in undergrad business programs, HR, culture, right? These are all like buzzwords that some people overlook. The most fulfilling aspect of building Ownwell has been the team we've created and the culture we've created. The hungry attitude, the sense of urgency, both creating impact for all of our customers and for lives of employees. Really learning about how important that is, how to run an organization, how to motivate and incentivize an organization was probably the thing that business school taught me that I didn't realize would be so valuable as it is today running Ownwell.
Interesting. So going back to your, you know, saying that you highly recommend having co-founders instead of going out of your own, can you give us a specific example why?
First one, we're a venture-backed startup, right? We're growing very rapidly. We can do what we do for over 350,000 customers at this point because of software. We are building automation into everything we do. So I can service customers across the country, whereas the property tax appeal are typically serviced by tax consultants or attorneys that cannot do this at scale. So one, I'm the business guy. Joseph is the technical guy. He could be working at many places in the NASDAQ and making a lot of money because he's such an incredible engineer. But us paired together, we can accomplish quite a bit, and that he can build really anything. And isn't it genius in all regards of software programming and even managing software engineers and building products? So one, you're not going to have everything. You're going to have to find someone who has the expertise. I can go raise capital all day. He can go build product and automate and get to the margins that I need to go and raise more capital. So pairing your skills with someone else, you can't be a jack of all trades. And then two, I think just like the support system. There were times where we often looked at each other and said, like, we started the hardest business of all time, right? Like, why is this so operationally complex? And it's like, we're in this echo chamber of, man, we're trying to automate bureaucracy. Like, why didn't we just think of a note-taking app or something that just seems much more simple? And I'm sure those businesses have intricacies that make it difficult as well. But like, just being in the trenches together keeps us all going, right? Like, if I'm coming in and I'm at a zero that day, but Joseph and Frank are at 100, then like, they're going to lift me up and they're going to help. And so being all by yourself and being in an echo chamber, I can't imagine founding a company at this scale by myself. And that's why I don't recommend it.
I think that that's so important because what it sounds like is that you realize that, you know, you can't be the jack of all trades, you know, master of nothing, right? You need to surround yourself with, in this case, great co-founders who have different strengths. You can leverage those strengths and, you know, together, you got a much, much better a chance for success. So going back to, you're talking about business school and the power of networking, which obviously it was tough for you a little bit because you were virtual. I didn't go to business school, but in speaking to my friends who did, went to Harvard Business School, Stanford, wherever, they just said their biggest takeaway was the phenomenal network they made. But you also said that you learned a lot about organizational development and culture and everything. Do you feel like you learned more from business school when it comes to leading teams, or has it been in the past, I think, 4 years, your experience, you know, just rolling up your sleeves and leading teams?
Definitely the 4 years. No offense to business school. There is an ROI of business school, and I think it makes sense for some people's careers and not for others. But there's nothing like operating. I think like you can't replicate what it is to go from $0 in revenue to servicing 300,000 plus customers in the span of 4 years, and like all the problems that comes from going from three people to over 100 now, right? Like you can't get into that in business school or in case studies.
Yeah, 0 to 100 people. That's pretty incredible. I mean, in such a short time frame. What has changed about your perspective on leading since then? Because I assume you can't lead the same way when you have five people as you do 50 in 100. So how have you changed your communication? How have you changed working with your team? All that kind of stuff.
I like to say my job changes every 6 months, honestly. We're growing so quickly and things are evolving, and we're building new departments that we didn't have, right? Like we're building a sales organization, a partnership function that did not exist 2 years ago. And so job is constantly changing. How I manage it differently today. One thing we also say internally is if you're questioning whether or not you've communicated something, you clearly haven't, right? So like if it's over communicated, it is making it so obvious and reposting the same thing in Slack. Look, this is our goals. This is our progress. This is our OKRs. Reiterating, this is the mission. This is the vision. These are the values of the company. Here's how we operate. Here's how we make decisions. And here's what we're all striving for. Here's what I expect of you, right? Like, you have to say, and unfortunately be a broken record sometimes, just to make sure you're communicating to everybody. Because I'm sitting in the leadership team meeting, I'm sitting in stand up, I'm talking to investors, I know everything that's going on. But then you have people who are specialized in their function, and they, the more context they have, the more dangerous they can be, and the more effective they can be. So I'm saying the same stuff from meeting to meeting, but it you nailed it. It's all about communication at this point, figuring out, make sure everybody has the right context to do their job. And one of our core values as an organization is accelerate innovation. You can't innovate if you're not tied into someone in the engineering department or the product department, or thinking about, oh, this is how tax consultants have to do this, right? Like, you got to put yourself in the user's shoes and then think about the resources we have as an organization to even think about new ways to do things and accelerate. And so, right, like breaking down those silos, and it gets harder and harder to connect 100 people. When you're at 10, everybody knows what everybody's eating for lunch, right? Like, we're all sitting at the same table every day, whereas 100, we're in multiple offices at this point. And so making sure we're over communicating and we're making scalable decisions as we continue to grow the organization. And then last thing I'll say is my job has become much, much more about the people. At the beginning, I was a tax consultant. I was going to tax appeal hearings. Unfortunately for me, smarter people than me get to do that now. Like people who are specialists in property taxes, both in building software for tax consultants and actually in counties day in and day out, they're way better than me. And that's because we hired the best to do that. And I moved on to helping other areas of the organization develop and managing a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, it's not easy to grow and evolve. And it's also not easy to find and hire great people. I mean, there's a lot of people out there looking for work, but as far as finding a culture fit, somebody who aligned with your values and goals is so critical, especially in an organization like Ownwell, where you got to put your people first. So what strategies do you use, or what are the, I guess, besides what you just mentioned, like the core values and goals that you look for in the interviewing process to make sure that the people that you bring on board are a good fit for the organization?
Totally agree. Recruiting and hiring the right people is everything at this point. And one, as an organization, we developed the people function, or some people would call it HR, but people for us is HR, recruiting, learning and development, DEIB, right? All of that is in our people function. And we did that earlier than most people would advise. And so knowing how important the people we bring on and the culture we build is, we built that people function, people again, smarter than me to help guide me and the rest of the leadership team how to build this organization, how to recruit and maintain the best. As I look at candidates and I interview people, there's a couple of different things I always look for to make sure they're a cultural fit. And one is super basic for us. Like I said, in business school, we started during COVID. We were in three different states. Joseph, Frank, and I Zoom constantly, Google Meet, communicating through Slack or Discord. We had lots of different methodologies, and we actually hated it. So once COVID was over, once we were actually allowed to take our mask off, we went in the office. And since then, we haven't been an in-person, in-office culture. And I think for us, our specific culture that has been very fundamental in a basic filter for us, if you don't want to come in day in and day out and work with our team and be part of that team in the office, then you're not the right candidate for us. And I totally respect hybrid and remote workplaces, but the way we've chosen to do it, and I think we have a competitive advantage because of it, is in office and in person. And that's to cut down those communication silos, right? Like, much easier to communicate if I can walk up to someone's desk than if I have to write a long email or a long Slack because they're out to lunch somewhere. And so that's one piece. And then two, I always dig into intellectual curiosity. And that's something I'll ask weird questions often in my interviews, and just trying to find curious people that are going to dig into and find new ways to do things, challenge the status quo, and really drive that accelerate innovation piece. And I love intellectual curiosity. I love being able to have weird conversations, like pushing the edge of what is typical, and really questioning why we do everything. And so that those are a couple of things I look for in candidates.
Can you share an example of a weird question?
What's your favorite physical product that's not your phone or your computer? And then oftentimes I'll ask you why, and then how would you actually make it better? And so, like, I want you to go deep into something you love, like something that changes your life. Like a great answer that one of my answers would be AirPods, right? Like what AirPods did for headphones changed the world. And I can obsess over how I would make it better and that I love AirPods. The second question that I often ask is really open-ended. What do you know more about than anybody else in this office? And so it's like, find me a subject that's weird. Even if it's, you know, look, I'm a total Harry Potter nerd. Or like, you can go deep in any subject. Are you curious? Are you willing to like double click in certain areas and really be proactive and explore new topics?
I've heard you talk about this before, and I'm a huge believer in it. You know, obviously my show is called the Learn It All podcast and my company's called Learn It. Where does having a growth mindset or a learn it all mentality, continuous learning, fall into all of this for you personally and as an organization?
My head of operations always likes to say, you're either learning or you're earning. Ideally both. But you're investing in yourself, right? You're either building your bank account or you're building this asset that is what you know, right? You're learning. And so learning is fundamental for every role within the organization. What's next for you? What do you want to learn? What do you want to get out of this? If you're just coming in for a paycheck, then like Unwell's not the right place for you. We want you to be here to develop, to grow, and to push others to develop and grow. And even learning to push others to develop and grow is a skill that I'm developing, right? So like there's so much you can learn in building an organization. And so we have a learning development stipend. Not enough people use it. We're constantly pushing people to trying to explore. We have lunch and learns about different topics. So just recently we had our SEO marketing lead came in, told us all about SEO marketing, right? Like you're never going to get exposure to that if you're in the engineering department or in the property tax consulting, right? You're never going to hear about SEO marketing and get into the head of someone who's an expert there. So try and take lots of opportunities to let people be cross-functional. We also asked this question of leadership teams, like who would you love to shadow for a day? And we have some level of shadowing to one, you're getting more context on the business, and then two, you're getting exposure to stuff you never would have. And I think that helps people continue to do their jobs. We actually, interesting, you said continuous learning. We changed our value from continuous improvement to accelerate innovation and get the same, we tried to drive really the same outcome with that. But we felt that continuous improvement was a straight line. So we wanted to add accelerate. Like we specifically changed that because accelerate, I want learning to pick up and go faster than just a straight line improvement. We want to scale exponentially, not linearly. And yeah, it's interesting you use those exact words because that used to be one of our values and that we had changed.
That's also good. I mean, what I hear you saying is the importance of curiosity. I love what you're talking about as far as shadowing other people in different departments. I mean, getting the opportunity for people to see, hey, here's what engineering's doing. Here's what's marketing doing. It also helps them, you know, build stronger bonds and relationships. And it helps with communication and all of that. And having learning stipends are huge. You also got to figure out ways to get people engaged to use them and continue to grow and learn, because at the end of the day, with all the customers we work with, we find out the ones where they have a roadmap and opportunity for people to keep learning and growing. That's where you not only hire and attract great talent, but retain it, which is so important. So, you know, for somebody who's been doing this for 4 or 5 years, your founders and yourself are definitely on the right path with all that, Colton. So keep that up. What advice do you have for other founders out there or people who are looking to be a founder? So for instance, you know, you were looking at starting your own thing, I think about 6 years ago, but you had to make that leap of faith into actually jumping off, you know, from working for somebody to working for yourself. So starting there, if somebody wants to be a founder, they have a great idea or they got a problem they want to solve, what do you recommend for making that transition from going from being a corporate job to starting your own thing?
I guess a couple different things aligned, and I'm not going to say like, look, go quit your job, because I went to business school. That was my break that like gave me the confidence. And I was even still working at a venture capital firm while I was starting the business. I mean, you got to pay bills. You got to put food on the table. But I think if you're hungry, and you have to be hungry to start your own business and go out on your own, figure out a way to find the time to go and talk to customers, right? Whether it's people you know or throwing up a SurveyMonkey link or a dead end web page just to get someone's email or their phone number, right? Someone's going to come to the web page, call them, go out to coffee, talk to people on the street, right? For us, our customers are homeowners, anybody who owns real estate. Lucky for us, they're everywhere. We've talked to people in the quad at UCLA. Every time I went to a pitch competition, we'd see people hitting the website. And like, this was a Wix website. It was not good at the beginning. And it was get your contact information. It was over. And then we try and contact people and figure out what we need to do for them. So you really don't have to build that much to get some more data points that push you to, you know, to a point where you're like, okay, I'm going to send it and I'm going to do this full time. And for us, I had that gap in business school where I could spend, you know, let's say 10 hours a week working on the business, talking to people, trying to build a website, trying to drive traffic. I was doing everything for free. And so try and build the product to a point where people want it and they would be really upset if it went away, and or product or service or anything you can automate. And then at that point, I was able to go and raise capital, which pros and cons, right? Like, we probably could have built the business and gone a lot slower had we not raised capital. But we had to pay salaries and provide for our family. So we ended up going down the venture path and raising capital to build the business and selling a portion of the business to fund marketing and explore. But, right, like, you can work a job and start a company at the same time. And so use your free time to go and talk to people, go and build product, throw up a website, and don't get into creating an LLC or making sure you have the perfect domain name, right? Like, those are things you should optimize for after you're making money, right? Like, you don't need to found, maybe this is, I shouldn't be giving legal advice here, and this is not legal advice, but you don't need to create an entity or start a business, right? Like, the order of operations is wrong. Go find a customer who's willing to pay you for something before you put in way more time doing other stuff that doesn't matter. The website doesn't need to be that beautiful if you have the right idea. And so lots you can do in your free time. Yeah. Just validate some of the basic assumptions.
I interviewed a guy named Henrik Wedelin, who is a founder of BarkBox. You've probably heard of it. And he said exactly what you did, in the sense that, you know, he calls it site testing. They came up with this idea. He didn't have an entity. He didn't have an LLC. He had Square or something on his phone. And he just went around and people just started putting their credit cards in. No website, anything. And he had about 50, 60 people paying him. Didn't even know how to get the boxes of dog treats to the people who bought them. But for him, that's like, okay, after he did that enough, that's when they went, you know, full force and building BarkBox, which, you know, obviously it's been huge. Which is such great advice, because, Colton, you know, there's just so many people out there who just want everything to be perfect, and they have their 5-year business plan, and before you know it, they just get passed by, right?
Exact same thing for us. We'd have someone come through the form flow, throw an address, and I'd be like, how do you appeal property taxes in Massachusetts? I have no idea, but they just signed up, right? So like, you just have to jump in. And worst case scenario there, you had one person that you disappointed and you refunded the money, right? Like, you're trying to build a business totally for hundreds of thousands of people. Like, take some risk. Yeah.
What would you recommend to founders who start their own thing, and how do they go about managing their finances, you know, especially they raise some money, and also scaling once their test product has shown that they're you know, actually have customers interested?
I mean, a couple different ways you can go about it. Totally depends on the scale of the business and really what your sights are set on. I took the venture path, so that's what I can really speak to best. So I raised venture capital money with a path to profitability. And you're right. At a certain point to raise money, you have to have that financial model. 5 years, that's aggressive. They're not going to believe anything you say after year two anyways. Build out for an organization, the path to get into a sustainable organization that can scale and really figure out your economics, right? Like what drives one sign up? How much unit economics is that? What's it going to cost me to service it or build that box? And then how much profit we're going to have at the end of the day. It doesn't have to be a complex model to get there. And then as you think about your personal finances, I was lucky in that we were able to raise enough capital that I could pay myself 50 grand a year. And that's legitimately how much I paid myself for the first several years of the company's existence. Same with other founders, right? Like I paid rent and because I believed in what was coming next. And at a certain point, when we raised capital the next time, the investors were like, hey, pay yourself some real money so you can shop at Whole Foods rather than, you know, somewhere else or eating ramen. It will come as you have success and take more risk. The opportunity to live life a little more comfortably will come, but don't like I optimize for the fastest answer and flipping over stones. I would have rather failed in a year than take 4 years to fail, but own the whole company. All right. So time is our most valuable resource. It's okay if you don't make money at the beginning. Make sure you're getting to the answer rather than, you know, walking in circles. And so think about finances, think about it from the beginning, make sure you know how the business is going to work and what's it going to look like. You've thought through the finances, the financial model is going to be wrong 100% of the time. But as long as you've thought through it all, you'll be better prepared to tackle what comes in the future. And then just make sure you can not go hungry as you find the answers and figure out the long-term plan of the business.
And you also recommend, as you said before, is having co-founders to help take on some of the risk, help bounce ideas through and everything. And you have spoken about, you know, you have these great co-founders, but things don't always go perfect, right, with them. So I don't know, have there been any big blow-ups? You don't have to share what it is, like where you guys just don't agree. And because that happens, right? That happens with me and my executive team. And so I'm just kind of curious how the decision-making process works in a situation like that. And how do you push forward? Because it's something that's bound to happen. Conflict is actually, I believe, healthy in organizations.
We're all passionate people. So absolutely. I would say like on a weekly basis, we had good arguments. But key is good arguments, not like personal arguments. Not, you know, at the end of the day, can we all disagree and commit on what we decide to do and not say, I told you so when someone's wrong? And so like making sure that you have respect for each other and you trust each other, that we all have the same intent. We want to build an incredible business that makes a huge impact and we can all agree on those things. So like continue to focus on, let's agree on these things. There are many times where, look, we had to take walks. We had like a ritual when we were all pissed off at each other. We'd go and play pool. And so we'd go to this billiards bar. And like, it's just what we did. And even if we hated each other, like we would go and do it. Even where we work now, which is an office in downtown Austin, 65 people, we're right next to a bar. That bar loves us. We end up there a lot. And I'm not saying it has to revolve around alcohol, but right. Like, make sure you're involved and care about them as humans in addition to, you know, trying to build this business together. And because as an entrepreneur, your life can get consumed by the business, personal and professional. And that's kind of just something you're in for. But yeah, having respect, assuming positive intent, and not shying away from it. I think exactly to your point, Damon, if it starts to get heated, don't run away. Like figure out a way to have a heated discussion or like let bring down the heat a little bit or say like, this is how we can communicate in situations like that. Cause that's when you honestly get to better decisions is when people are willing to stand up and say like, this is what I think is right. And here's not, or you're debating ethical issues or, right. Like there's so many things that are going to come at us You need to be able to have that debate, or else it's like I didn't have co-founders. So what's the point? And then last thing I'll say there, it wasn't it was three co-founders. So it was a little easier. If it was just me and one other person, I would not recommend as a founder doing like a 50-50 split, because then you're in this situation where there is no decision-making power and someone's going to be unhappy or try to usurp someone, right? Like whether you have an investor or someone else, advisor to help you kind of figure it out, three people was easier than two. And that's how boards are set up, right? There's never a four-person board. It's always five or three, right? And so make sure there's a way to make decisions and have final outcomes.
I really like that you agree that no matter what, you're going to go play pool or have drinks, regardless, right? You know, just if that's, I think that's so important, because you're going to have situations where you're pissed at each other, you know? And I also think, yeah, obviously if 50-50 co-founders, then it's tough, you know, you need somebody to be able to break the ice. And the other two things, and I would think to go along with this, is if you're Colton, you know, you lose out on a decision, but the other two agree, you got to be 100% in supportive of it. You can't, you know, cry in your soup. And I'm sure as well, listeners, it's also important too, that these conversations, hopefully, between the three of you, don't take place in front of your whole staff. You know, I think it's really important to show, you know, healthy conflict, but a united front once that decision's made.
Totally agree. There have been moments where you have to be that united front. It's almost like parents. I shouldn't speak too much to parents, but there's been moments where one of my co-founders has said something in public. I'm like, okay, I have to go with this now, even though I totally disagree. And like, we'll talk about this later, but I'm right. Supporting them in this instance because the whole team's listening right now. And I'm not going to jump in front. Like, you know, we can go talk about this after.
I love what you say about how you're leading your team and how you're growing and developing your team. So what do you see as the future for Ownwell, but also as yourself as an entrepreneur? What's the future look like, or what do you think your plan is?
I love Ownwell in that single family homes and real estate in general is the largest asset class in the world. So if I'm helping Americans who the majority of which their largest asset they will ever own is their home, and I am helping them with their largest expense every single month, there's nothing more valuable that I can be doing. I am trying to make the biggest impact possible. Home services in general is a multi-trillion dollar industry. There's very few industries you can say trillions. And so there's no other company where I can help people on the scale that I can, and I believe we will at Ownwell. And the future of Ownwell, you can really imagine I'm that digital assistant to give you smart, personalized recommendations to help you manage your real estate. And whether that's, hey, you should put in a new front door because that's the highest ROI thing you can do for a new property, and that door's not looking good, all the way to, this is the moment you should refi. Here's the best person you should work with, and you're going to save $3,000 over the next year, right? Like smart personalized recommendations, it's numbers and cents, and real estate is very difficult and complex to understand. And there's a lot of processes and legal work. And that's why we started in property taxes. It was so underpenetrated. We can help homeowners with so many different things. There is no consumer experience for homeownership. There's nowhere you're going for advice. Everybody's calling their dad with what they should be doing. Right? Nothing against dads, but they're not always there. And so like, how do we bring financial advocacy for real estate owners across the country? And that's what we're really trying to build at Ownwell.
Well, I've really enjoyed our conversation today, Colton. You know, we talk about Ownwell and how you help people with their largest assets, which is property. I learned something new. I thought that property taxes were fixed, and that's not the case. And I appreciate your sharing your story of your journey from going from business school to, you know, navigating around through the COVID times, finding these great co-founders, what you're building together, what you're working on. I love the fact that learning is in accelerated growth is so important to you. I think you're totally on the right path there. Love the idea, like I mentioned, of, you know, working out your differences at the bar or someplace else, coming back together, and the passion you have for helping others. So This is all great stuff, and especially for people out there who are looking to start their own thing, be a founders, and of course, people like me who have houses who want to see if there's a way we can pay for private school with these little kids, you know, and maybe get some of that money back from property tax or utilities or whatever. Where can we connect with you at on social media to learn more?
Best way to connect with me is on LinkedIn or through Ownwell's pages on social media, or visit the website, ownwell.com. If you want to get started, enter your address. It's a really easy process, and we'll guide you from there. Let us get to work for you and try and save you money. And again, if you want to connect with me, feel free to hit me up on LinkedIn.
All right, Cole. And so listeners out there, first, if you've enjoyed this episode, please, you know, leave us a review on Apple or Spotify, rate and review, of course. But also, for everybody that you know who owns a house, I want you to text this episode to them or text the Ownwell website, because they should start a conversation. They don't have anything to lose by not doing it. You know, this could be some hidden found, some money you could find that we could all benefit from. So until next time, everybody, stay curious and keep